especially difficult because our last move, I had a difficult time finding a job. It took about 2 months. And I think the spouse that works understands that one, it's gonna be hard to get a job, and two, to keep it.
It's so important to do what you love and to get your arms around expressing yourself down to your heart, down to your soul. And if you can do that, everything else kind of falls in place. I mean, as far as money and everything else, responsibility.
He's getting ready to leave the service and you're asking him, what's your plan? Well, sir, I'm going to go to school. I'm going to go back and go home and go to school. And that's about it. And they don't have a lot of thought as to what they're going to do. They're not familiar with their GI Bill benefits that they have available and other such programs. They don't know what's out there.
What Dave teaches people is how to manage their life in such a way that they come to the place they really can do something other than just pay their own bills.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome nationally syndicated radio host and best-selling author, Dave Ramsey.
Oh, I am enjoying just the idea of going into this lesson. This is a powerful lesson. Careers and extra jobs. Turn in your workbook to that. We spend, of the 13 lessons, 12 lessons on the outgo. Outgo is only half the equation. Income is the other half of the equation, because we've all heard the old saying, if your outgo exceeds your income, eventually your upkeep will become your downfall. And so you know that income is part of this. And sometimes the truth is you do just need to make more money. Yes, we need to manage what we have better. Yes, we need to learn to live on less than we make, a concept Congress can't grasp. But at the end of the day, sometimes we have to just make more money. As a matter of fact, 33%, one-third of the families that come to us for one-on-one crisis financial counseling have had some kind of a, quote, negative career situation. Now, by that I mean they're laid off, or they got laid off and they got a new job, but it was less than the old one. Household income was at $50,000. Bills were at $50,400. Got laid off, got a new job, but now household income is at $40,000. Thus, a $10,000 a year, $830 a month crisis develops. And these folks end up in our office saying things like, should we cash out the 401k to stop the foreclosure? And they end up in a mess. And sometimes they're completely out of work, but sometimes it is a situation where they're just underemployed because of a shift in their career. Now, I've been really blessed. I have been on commission or self-employed all but 3 months of my life. I've had one real job in my life where they actually paid me a salary. So I've got a little different paradigm, a little different way of looking at this job and career thing than a lot of people. And I've had some help from some wonderful people like Dan Miller, one of the leading career coaches in the nation, who actually assisted me in putting together this lesson. This is some incredible, incredible material, and it'll make you think and relook how you feel about your career, how you feel about what you're doing with your life. Let's look at the first blank there and begin to fill these in. The average job in America today only lasts about 3.2 years in length. Only about 3.2 years in length. And we found some interesting statistics with the Census Bureau as well. The average, that's amazing when you stop and think about it. You're going to have a whole bunch of jobs in your life. And that means if you've been on the job 7 or 8 years, you're well overdue to change. Change is a part of our world. And you know, we used to in this country, we used to think, let's get the big job or the good job, the stable job with the big company, because you can count on them. Not anymore, right? Because our economy has completely shifted from big companies. Now, big companies make the news. Big companies are what we all look at out there in the distance somewhere. But the truth is, big companies are not really the answer. If you look at these statistics, they're pretty amazing. 60% of the companies in the U.S. are 0 to 4 employee size companies. And if you look all the way up, under 100 employees is 98% of the companies in North America. Well, so when government and political movements and philosophies start stepping on small business in America, we are crushing the very soul of this country. Because that is what it's about. Small business employs more people. Small business gains more ideas. Small business can float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. They can make things happen, where big business is a dinosaur and it takes it forever to move around. So we need to understand, even if you work for a large company, that you're unusual. That most people don't work for a large company because most companies are under 100 people in size. Most companies, we could say, since we could say 60%, are under 4 people. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Now, with the average job lasting 3.2 years, that means you're going to have 16 to 18 jobs, 16 to 18 positions in your lifetime. The days of getting a job like my grandfather did at Alcoa Aluminum, right in the midst of the stock market crash, he was young and married at those days and heading into the Depression and felt great to get that $7 a week or whatever it was he got paid in those days. And he worked for Alcoa Aluminum as an accountant there for 38 years, had one job basically in his entire life and retired from that company with the gold watch, the pension, and the ongoing benefits. Those days are gone in America. They're gone. They are a myth of a bygone era. For good or for bad, I'm not sure. We'll talk about that. I kind of think it's for good because I think it took good people many times and didn't push them out of the nest and let them fly and become the eagles that they were designed to be. Many times they got stuck in a rut is what they did. And Zig Ziglar says a rut is merely a grave with both ends kicked out. So I want you to become what God designed you to become, and I want you to start having some fun in your career process. There is no one correct job. We've had 800,000 people laid off in this country in the past 12 months. Man, that sounds awful, doesn't it? But you know, we've had 2 million new small businesses started in that same period of time. Change is a way of life. And we know that the studies tell us that about 80% of the college graduates are now working in something totally unrelated to what they got their degree in. It's very unusual to find someone to even use the degree that they set up themselves in terms of an actual application of that particular skill set. Now, you use the knowledge that you get in school, so school is good. And you use your ability and understanding of how to acquire new knowledge because you can't quit growing in a culture that's changing as fast as this one and do anything but struggle. There's no way around it. So keep in mind, if you're not using your degree, a lot of people I talk to, they're, well, I got a degree in so-and-so, isn't that funny? Well, no, not really. You would be about normal. Because it's really tough to pick out the career path and the exact direction of what you're going to do the entire rest of your life at 18 years old. And so you probably didn't do too bad a job. Most people take that general knowledge and the knowledge of how to gain more knowledge from an education and move forward. So education, this idea of I'm going to school to get the technical knowledge to immediately go and apply it the rest of my life, seldom happens in our culture. Experts tell us that 85% of all products and services we are using right now will be obsolete in 5 years. Now, we all know that to be true. I'll tell you, we do this at our office. On my personal desk in my office is where this right here came from. This is a little stack of change. Now, this particular little stack of change sits on my office, right, my office desk. If you ever come in there and visit me, it's right next to my phone. Why do I keep it there? Because basically, change happens, right? And change is going to keep happening. And I put it in there to remind me that nothing is going to be the same. That about the time I think everything's steady and solid, the whole thing is going to be fluid and change direction, or I'll probably help it to change direction. One of the things our team laughs at me about and kind of makes fun of me is they say, Dave, about the time we get everything working just right and operating, you come in and blow it all up and we have to change and go a whole new direction. I said, that's right, because we got to be fresh. We got to be cutting edge. We got to be bleeding edge. We got to be over the edge because change is coming. See, if you don't change, you will be left in the dust. You think everything's going to be the same? The rate of change in our culture right now is blinding. The rate of change brings stress, doesn't it? John Nesbitt did a whole book on trends and change. And in John's book, he says that if cars had changed as much as computers in the past 25 years, you could buy a Rolls Royce for $2.98 that got 20,000 miles to the gallon. That's the rate of change in the world that we're in right now. And it can become a little bit of a problem, can't it? I mean, how many of you remember playing one of these? Now you're telling your age, right? I had some little bitty ones with holes in the center, those little plastic things you push in. You remember those? And now that's big time age. And then I remember when we went from that to these. You remember these? All right. I heard the comedian Sinbad talking about 8-tracks. He said, I loved 8-tracks, man. He said, they had to make the whole album good. Because you couldn't skip around, you know. You could jump from track to track and get the first song or whatever. Three or four times, I believe it was, through there, wasn't it? Or something like that. And don't you remember about the time that old 8-track would get out of line, you'd get a little business card or something, stick it up in there so he'd quit skipping. You remember doing that? You know? Change is coming. You can count on it. And then I remember when my old Eagles 8-track, it turned into a cassette, didn't it? And then all of a sudden, you couldn't even get 8-tracks. And an 8-track in your car. And cassettes, and of course, we all know where it went from there, right? We went to CDs. And from CDs, we went from there into the marketplace, and we tried to do mini CDs. You've seen the ones that are a little bit of like a silver dollar in size. And really what it ended up doing is it jumped all the way from CDs to air. This is the new MP3 recorders, where you can download off of the internet or download anything you want. You can put in several sets of albums in this one little puppy. Now it's all just a computer file at the end of the day, is what it comes down to. Change is coming. That's a little hard for an old guy like me. Just doesn't have much soul, you know? I'm still wanting to go back here, you know? But change is coming. You can count on it. And you better be ready. You've got to do what Wayne Gretzky says. They ask Wayne Gretzky, the great Gretzky, one of the greatest hockey players in all of time, except possibly Gordie Howe. And, you know, sorry, Wayne, right? but they ask the great Gretzky, they said, how do you always seem to just be magical with the puck? He says, I never skate to where the puck is. I always skate to where the puck is going to be. And that's what you've got to do. With the rate of change, you have to anticipate and to look and to go to where it is going to be. The key to power in our careers is to first look at ourselves. The more we understand ourselves, the more we can move forward with boldness, with confidence, and we can enhance our effectiveness by first being introspective. Quit trying to be something that you weren't designed to be. And sometimes you were forced into that mold by your parents, weren't you? They've told you all your life what you were going to be because it was their dream for your life, and it has absolutely nothing to do with your gift set. It has nothing to do with your passions, with your attitudes. It has nothing to do with that. And you got forced into that because you were told all of your life that that's what you were going to be. As a small business owner that's very passionate and on a crusade with the material that I teach, I have to be very, very careful with my 3 children. To not force them and mold them, because it would be a neat dream of mine for some of them to come along and pick up this baton and run it someday. But not unless that's God's calling on their lives. It would be a disaster for them. It would take the energy and the zest out of their life. And they might have been designed to go and find the cure for some major disease. And I would have cheated the world out of that by forcing them into my dream. So be careful about that. Look at yourself and think about this. Earl Nightingale says that most people spend more time picking out a suit of clothes, than they did picking out their career. You need to look at yourself and decide what you're doing. And keep in mind when you're doing that, I talk to young people all the time, and I tell them, I say, money is not the issue. Money will not make you happy. Yes, you need to think about money. Don't go spend $80,000 or $90,000 or $100,000 on postgraduate work to get a $20,000 a year job. That would be pretty stupid. Okay? Don't play that game. You got to think about the money and a return on investment, but money cannot be your motivator. There was a study done back in the 60s on this issue. Some psychology students at the University of Berkeley in California decided they wanted to prove that money wasn't really, at the end of the day, the motivator. That the real motivator was a sense of accomplishment. The real motivator was meaning, right? And so what they did was they hired some people. There's a lot of unemployment in these days. They hired some people for this study. They said, what we want you to do, and they were paying them average wage for that day, okay? Let's say it was $5 an hour as an example. Probably it was higher than, I mean, probably it was lower than that in the 60s. But, and what they did is they paid them all day long to dig a ditch. Dig a ditch. Pile the dirt to the side of the ditch. And then about halfway through the day, they said, okay, enough, fill the ditch in. And about the time the ditch is starting to get full, a couple of these guys are going, what are we doing this for? They said, well, it's an experiment. You mean we're not digging the ditch to put something in it? You mean we're not digging the ditch to lay a pipe or some cabling? No, you're just digging a ditch to fill it back in. Okay. Next morning, 40% of them didn't show up. They doubled their income that day and said, dig a ditch. Dig a ditch. Halfway through the day, they said, fill it back in. And towards the end of the day, there's a lot of grumbling going on. The natives are restless. And they said, okay, before you leave, we want you to know, tomorrow we're going to double your pay. They still had 40% more that didn't show up the next day. By then, these people are making way over any kind of a wage, but they just couldn't mentally, for 2 days even, get past the fact that they were doing something that had no meaning. They were doing something that... And if you get caught in a job like that, you know what I'm talking about. It's like, man, if I disappeared off the planet, nobody would flipping notice. You know, and you feel like you are not making any kind of a difference. You feel like you're not heading towards anything even. This is not even a path to get somewhere. This is truly a gerbil in a wheel job. Then you won't want to work anymore at that position. There must be a sense of meaning, a sense of purpose, a sense of accomplishment. You have to feel like you're getting somewhere. You need to feel like that there's something being achieved here. And you need to feel like you are on fire for something. I can tell you that is one of the huge benefits of working on our team is we are on a crusade and we have work that matters. What we do is changing lives. And everyone there is in that mindset. If someone works for our firm that feels like they have a J-O-B, they don't end up staying long. Because they either go find something on their own or we help them. Because we want members of a team that's on a crusade, that's on a mission, that this thing has meaning, it has purpose, and it's easy to get up every morning. And even when times are bad, even when there are frustrations, and there are frustrations, you have a reason to keep going when there's a sense of accomplishment. When by degrees I meet people who come up and say, you know, Dave, we paid off $60,000 worth of debt. Dave, you know, this situation, we were almost divorced, and this thing saved our marriage. There's a sense of power about that. There's a sense that what we're doing matters. And man, I tell you what, you almost would do it for free, but why bother? Just because you have the ability to do something does not mean it is well suited to you. This is probably the most common mistake in career planning. Most people feel like that you need to have an ability to do something. And Viktor Frankl said, life is never made unbearable by circumstances, but only by a lack of meaning or purpose. So you need to not just look at ability, but you need to look at your purpose, at your direction, at where you're going here. So ability, just because you can stack things well, because you have you have good use of your fingers and you're able to mechanically see and visualize and do things, does not mean that that's what you should be doing. You might want to apply that in some other way. You may be doing a job that you are good at, but you hate it, and it has no sense of meaning or purpose. Look at yourself in this situation and begin to do it. You should get a job. You should pick a career that blends your skills, your abilities, your personality traits, your values, your dreams, and your passions. Now, if any of those are out of whack, you can have a problem. Let's say you're an excellent salesperson, but you are on fire for financial peace. And you absolutely think credit cards are the worst thing in the world. And your job, even though you are an excellent salesperson, you have good personality traits for that. You have passion about it. You have dreams about the things you're going to accomplish with the income you create. But your job is to sell credit card machines. Well, I mean, if that was me, that would be so contradictory to my value system that I, even though everything else lined up, my values didn't line up. And man, it would be dead against who I am as a person, okay? And so you need to look at something that lines these things up. Don't miss that item right there. That's very, very important. And be careful with your plans. Be open to move some things around. There's an old saying that says, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plan. He can see the end. All right, he can already see where you're going to be 10 years from now. And he's going, oh, okay, this is going to work. Look, they're heading that direction. That'll work, okay? Now, don't be too rigid once you develop all this stuff. Be flexible, because I can tell you the one thing about it is it's going to move. And the other thing that we've done in this country that we've made a mistake of in this culture is we take way too much of our identity from our we take way too much of our identity from our job. Okay, your job is not your life. It's simply one tool for a successful life. Your job is not your life. It is simply one tool for a successful life. If your job is your whole thing, then you're what's called a workaholic, right? You have to have family, you have to have spiritual, you have to have the physical, you have to have all these other elements in balance in your life. Now, I'm passionate, I run wide open, I work really hard, but I also play really hard, and I also, when I'm hanging out with my family, do that with the same intensity and focus and passion. You've got to have a well-rounded situation, or you end up walking with a limp in terms of the balance of your life. Learn to distinguish between the following terms. Your vocation is a calling, a purpose, a mission, a destiny. I've heard it said that if your vocation is something you love, you're on vacation the rest of your life. I don't work for a living. I have a blast. I thoroughly enjoy every day being on the radio. And I'll tell you what, the funny thing about talk radio is you can't fake it. You can't fake it. It's too intimate a medium. If I'm coming in there and having a bad day, you guys all know it. You know, if I had too much coffee before the show starts, you guys all know it. You know? And the truth is, I love what I'm doing. I get energy out of that. When I'm running a really hectic, high-powered week with a lot of hours, I do the show because it energizes me. It doesn't de-energize me. Think about that. I love to speak like this. It's one of my favorite things in the world, to get in an auditorium, to get in a stadium setting where there's hundreds and thousands of people out there. And it is a blast for me. I have a good time doing this. That is a vocation. That is a vocation. And the happiest times you'll ever have in your life are doing something that fulfill you, that you're in that zone, that you know you're locked in on something. And I challenge each one of you to start looking for that. Some of you merely have a career. That's a line of work, but not necessarily a calling. And sadly, way too many people in this culture, with statistics telling us that 70% of Americans literally hate their job, too many people just have a job. It's daily activity that produces an income. That's kind of a sad existence when you think about it. Sometimes for a period of time, you have to stay in a job, don't you? Because you have to feed your family. And that's called being a responsible adult. And that's smart. But lay out a game plan. Begin an idea that over the next 2, 3, 5 years, that you begin to make some turns. You pick up a class. You make some contacts. You go ride around in a car with someone that does what you want to do on your day off. Begin to do something to make that transition into something that you love and that you've always wanted to do. The major quest in life is not what you are getting, but it is what you are becoming. Too many times in our culture, because we have become so stuff-driven, we have missed this and we've created some miserable people out there as a result. They picked out a job only based on the income it would create. And they're just like those ditch diggers at Berkeley. They are so unfulfilled that you could double their income and they would still be miserable 3 days later. They'd get a little high, a little boost, a little attaboy out of that. But some people work at a place where they are never appreciated, where they are never told they do a good job. Most people work at a place where they aren't appreciated, where they are never told they do a good job. Some of you that are leaders, that are managers, need to take that to the office this week. And you need to pass out some attaboys. There's some that are well overdue around your place. Tell some people, attaboy, good job, attagirl, way to go. Understanding your personal style will tell you more about where you will function successfully than knowing your educational background. Again, I am a fan of education. I have brainwashed my children about going to college. They think it's a federal law that they will be put in jail if they don't go to school. Okay? I believe in education. But there are too many times that we think this is an automatic thing. If you go to school 4 years and go get the job, it's automatic that you're going to prosper. It is not automatic. As a matter of fact, education has very little to do with it at the end of the day. We've already established 80% of the people don't even use the technical training they got during that four-year period. Only 20% are doing that. So what gives here? Well, you've got to get your personal style into this. You've got to enjoy the process. Someone who doesn't like people would not be a very good person in the sales and marketing field, right? Someone who really doesn't like numbers and details probably shouldn't be doing accounting, right? I mean, so get your personality style into it, your bent, the way you were designed, your blueprint, your DNA. How were you put together? Because you were put together to do a specific thing, and you ought to be doing that. And you ought to be on a particular direction. And in the addendum, there's a whole series of personality things. Go back in the back of the workbook later. Don't do it right now. But go back there in your time of discussion, as an example, in the small groups, and look at those personality styles and some of those traits, and you'll go, oh, that's me. Oh, that's me. We've done these personality style analysis with our children over the years and with Sharon and I, and it's helped us in our marriage with the communication. Because she looked at my little thing, and she said, oh, that's what's wrong with you. A recent Harvard University study reported that 15% of the reason for a person's success is due to technical skill and knowledge, while 85% of the reason for success originates from the person's personal skill, their attitude, their enthusiasm, their self-discipline, their ambition. You have to set goals. You need to be on fire. Dave Thomas didn't graduate from high school and formed all of Wendy's. Later got his GED. Good for Dave. But the point is not to have everybody be a high school dropout and hope they can flip burgers. That's not the idea. The point is he did it in spite of that because he would not be denied. He set goals. It was desire. It was perseverance. It was attitude. It was aptitude. It was a guy who learned to lead because he had to learn to lead to be able to win. J.C. Penney said, show me a stock clerk with goals and I'll show you a CEO. Show me a person without goals and I'll show you a future stock clerk. You've got to have a game plan. You've got to have this focus, this intensity, this laser beam. I will not be denied. This rocky type of endurance. And you only have that when you're going after something that matters to you. You can't have that kind of intensity, that kind of inner heartbeat, this thing moving when you're doing it on someone else's agenda. Because you've got a career your mama picked out for you. Or because you've got a career that you picked out just because of money and now you're running this boss's agenda, okay? One thing about our team is they're all on a crusade and they will fight me over something if they think that they're right about that direction because they believe more in the direction and in the flow of this information to people to help people than they believe in this person. And that's smart because that way I haven't surrounded myself with a whole bunch of yes men and yes women, okay? I got some people that will go, hey, you are wrong. That's a good thing to have in your life, isn't it? And see, if it's all about the money, everyone's afraid to say, you're wrong, you know? You don't want to bring it up. You don't want to talk about it, right? The reason that candidates many times with the best qualifications on paper don't get the job is that that's not why the job is there. people get jobs because hiring people perceive this desire. They perceive this enthusiasm, this perseverance. They're not merely looking at degrees down through here and work history. And so remember this when you're putting together your resume. Let's talk about marketing the product of you into an area that you love. Remember, when you're putting together your resume, resumes do not get jobs, they get interviews. You are not trying to sell yourself. You're trying to sell an interview with that piece of paper. If resumes worked, you would just mail out resumes and you'd have six companies call and say, why don't you start Monday? Resumes don't work. All they're good for is to possibly sell an interview. And the interview is when the product called you is sold. And that's nerve-wracking, but you've got to understand you are in the marketing business when you are on a job hunt. And you're selling a product you're pretty familiar with. You. So don't go in there and try to be someone you're not. People can smell that a mile away. And if it's not a fit, just say, you know what, this is not a fit. And that's okay. Because there's other J-O-Bs out there. There's other things to do. And don't get all caught up in that one thing. I've got to have that job to exist. You need to be on a path that includes lots of alternatives that line up with your values, your passions, and your abilities. Most hiring decisions are made in the first 3 to 5 minutes of an interview. In the first 3 to 5 minutes of an interview. One particular article in the Wall Street Journal interviewed hiring executives across America, and a lot of them said that they literally, in a high-volume hiring situation, will make the decision in the first 10 to 15 seconds. I was signing books the other night, and I had a man and his wife come up, and their two children come up with them that were, they weren't children, they were young people, young teenagers. And the young man walked up to me and stuck his hand out and introduced himself and looked me in the eye with a firm handshake. He didn't crush my hand, but he didn't give me a dish rag. And in our culture, I'm amazed at how many dads have not taught their young men how to shake a hand. Okay? That'll blow an interview in a heartbeat. That's your first 10 seconds. You've got to walk in there and meet that thing head on, not arrogant, not prideful, but confident. And that young man there, 16, 17 years old, said, my name is, and shook my hand. I went, that was good. That guy, you can just tell, you know, and you don't want him doing this, right? He has, that mama and dad have poured some stuff into that kid. He's going to be good. He's going to do well. Ads in the newspaper only represent about 15% of what is available. And yet that's where most people spend 100% of their time looking. You need to spend most of your time on the other 85%. Most jobs of high quality, most positions that flow out of a vocation mindset never make it to the paper, do they? They never even make it on the job market. No one lets them know because someone knows someone and helps them get that position called networking. And so be sure you're spreading the word out there within people that you know and that know you and love you that have connections and can put you in a position to hook you up with someone who can put you in your dream approach to a job. Target the companies that you would like to work for and contact them at least 3 times. At least 3 times. The first thing we suggest you do is to send out a simple introduction letter. Did you notice we didn't send them a resume? That's shocking. This is a letter saying, I'm getting ready to start bothering you. Right? This is a letter saying, I have identified your company as a really good place to hire me, and over the next several weeks, you're going to identify me as someone you really need to be part of your team. Sounds almost arrogant, doesn't it? Sounds confident. It sounds a little different to most people's approach to looking for a job, doesn't it? And just mass resume mailing and then sit and wait. Okay? Send them a letter that says, I'm getting ready to begin a marketing program. We are going to market to you the best product in the marketplace today, and that's me. Now, we're being a little bit melodramatic, but you get the point, right? Okay? And then what you're basically telling them in that letter is a little bit about you and that you will be sending them another cover letter with a resume attached, so be expecting it. And of course, in that cover letter with that resume, now this resume does not merely list where you've been, okay? This resume lists what you learned where you've been and how that applies to their particular situation. Most people have access to a word processor that can do some pretty clean typesetting these days, okay? And so just customize every single resume to that company. I mean, the mission of the mission statement at the bottom of the resume needs to be to go to work for that company when you send it. Not just, I want this vague thing. I'd like someday to be a harvester of fruit, you know. I mean, what's up with, you get the wildest looking things on resumes, don't you? Most bizarre stuff out there. So what you need to do instead is send something that is customized to them, and in the cover letter, tell them that you will be giving them a phone call, a phone follow-up. So by then, they're expecting your call. Now, if it's a huge company and they're trash canning all of this stuff, they may not be. But we have already established that most companies are under 100 employees and would not be considered huge. Most companies in America don't have an HR person. Most companies have a president or vice president within a team of 30 or 40 or 5 or 10 employees that make the hiring decisions. And if they start seeing some things like this, they start to see some stuff. Now, I heard a story once that applies to this, and it'll tell you that this idea will work. I'm not sure I would want to work for this jerk, but it was kind of an interesting way of looking at what he did. This guy was a sales manager, and he was hiring and training salespeople in a very high rejection warrior kind of situation. These need to be salespeople that could draw the sword and go, wah, 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 right? They were not just, these had to be not just I like to kind of like people type sales. No, these were people that went in there, killed it, and drug it out in the street and gutted it. You know, I mean, these were people that really knew how to make it happen. You know what I'm saying? And he would interview these salespeople and tell them that perseverance was part of what it took to win at this job. And if you didn't have just intense, focused desire, you would lose at this job. And you know what, Henry? I think you're just the kind of guy we want. It's Thursday. And he would say something like, I want you to call me on Monday. And we'll tell you what's going on. You're just the kind of guy. And Henry goes out there going, man, I got that one. And he would call on Monday. And the guy wouldn't take his call. And he would call on Tuesday. And the guy wouldn't take his call. And he wouldn't take their calls for 2 weeks. Anyone that called after 2 weeks, he hired them. Everyone else, he weeded out people who wouldn't be persistent. Huh, a little bit manipulative. I don't know if I like this or not. But the point is, he was getting the results. He wanted somebody that would stick with it, that would not be denied, that would keep beating on the door, that would keep making it happen. And that's a good way to find them, isn't it? Okay. Now, I can tell you, I really don't want you pestering me to death if I've interviewed you. So that's not a technique I use. Okay. So that doesn't apply. You with me? So there's a fine line between persistence and pestering. Okay. But you've got to look in there and you've got to sometimes read into what these people are thinking. What are the job qualifications? And if it is a sales type, attack type position, then maybe you need to represent that in how you are marketing yourself. I mean, I don't know that you want a sales type, attack type accountant. Right? So if you're hiring someone to do your books, I don't know if you want these people calling you every day. They might worry the devil out of you about every penny the rest of the time they work there. Okay? You don't want somebody that's going crazy all the time in that kind of a setting. Take an active approach using these three steps for 30 to 45 days. That will open up opportunities for you. Now, you can't send out three. Active means you need to be doing a bunch of this. You need to identify any company, any area in which you want to be functioning in and go that direction and do a whole bunch of it. Now, the other side of this coin is that sometimes when we're getting out of debt, we're building up an emergency fund, we're doing these other things, sometimes for a short period of time, not for the rest of your life, because we want you to get financial peace, but for a short period of time, there are some reasons to do supplemental income. Part-time job, right? Sometimes you've got to do some things to make some things happen. Sometimes there's a log jam with the money and it just won't move. And the only way to move it is throw some dynamite in the middle, blows up some stuff, and gets some things moving. And that dynamite sometimes is a little extra income. Long-term income changes are covered by career changes. But many times the best way to meet short-term objectives is to take the dreaded part-time job. Now, I'm famous for telling people to deliver papers and throw pizzas. or throw pizzas and deliver papers, or throw papers and deliver pizzas, or whatever it takes. Because, hey, pizza delivery in our culture is an easy way to get a job. You can get one really quickly, and you can make pretty good money if you work in a decent neighborhood delivering those pizzas. But I'll tell you what, for some folks, that's tough. I had a guy in Financial Peace University years ago when I was teaching this live, and I was sitting in the small group with him, and I said, man, you know, you got to get some income coming in here. This guy had a new position that hadn't quite gotten into the bonus zone yet, and his family was falling further behind every single month. They were running in the negative, and he wasn't the government, couldn't print money, so he was having to figure out what to do, right? And so I said, look, man, you got to do something. You got to park cars. You got to deliver pizzas. You got to do something. This guy's like a $50,000 a year white collar executive. He did not see himself delivering pizzas. But over the next several weeks, his wife saw him delivering pizzas. And so he made the tough, tough, pride crushing decision to do what it took for a short period of time, so his family would be okay, and so he could afford to stay in that position. He said, Dave, that was okay. Everything was okay, except I had three young guys under me at work that I was training. And the toughest night of my life was when I had to deliver a pizza to one of them. Ouch. Had another guy who was a pastor, and in that pastor's position, his church was not able, a smaller church, to pay him. And he was bivocational. He had a real job, and then he was a pastor on the weekend, and it still wasn't cutting it. And so this guy, this man of the cloth, we looked up, and he was parking cars on the weekends for a short period of time to make it happen. Man, I've got admiration for people who can step out of their comfort zone, step down off that pride, and take care of their families. I don't want you to do that as a way of life for the rest of your life. I want you to do the things we've been talking about. Get in a zone, get a vocation, a calling. But I do want you to do that if you have to make things happen. I'm amazed about work. It's a money-making scheme. It'll cause some dollars to flow to your home. The following are examples of some short-term objectives. Number one, a part-time job could eliminate some monthly bills. Some of you have got some little nagging bills, some little $150 bills, some $52 bills. I don't know about this. Medical bills, it seems like all the years I did counseling, there was always a $52 bill to diagnostic. I don't know who diagnostic is, but if you drive near a hospital, they bill you $52. You know what I mean? Everyone's had one, you know? Sometimes you've got those little mosquito-type bills that are buzzing around your head that you just need to get them off of you, and a part-time job for 3 or 4 months would just clean up a whole huge portion of your list, because a bunch of them are under $1,000, and you could just knock out a bunch of them and be like a fly swatter for you. Another reason, of course, is to pay off debt, to accelerate the speed of your debt snowball. This focused gazelle intensity involves taking an extra job. Taking an extra job is one of the steps out of debt. Sometimes you want to purchase an item with cash. You said, okay, I'm not borrowing money, and I want a Sea-Doo. I want a Harley. And so for this period of time, I'm going to work extra, and that money is all going to go into the Sea-Doo account, the Harley account, or whatever that little toy thing is you want. I want a big screen. I don't care. Just set yourself an objective. Say, okay, that thing's $1,200. I've got to earn $100 a month for 12 months, or I've got to earn $200 a month for 6 months, or I've got to earn, and so on. Divide it out, right? And then go make that thing happen. Sometimes that's a good way to pay for things. Cash. Because you worked. Wow, what a different concept. So let's think through that. Another reason is to build up some lump sum savings. I think one of the most touching stories I've ever heard was, I was sitting in counseling with a couple years ago, and he was a school teacher, a public school teacher. And I think we would all agree that in most cases we do not pay public school teachers enough, especially for what we expect of them. And this guy, he had told me, he said, for sure, Dave, this is my calling. This is my vocation. This is what God put me on this planet to do, to help these kids. I am a school teacher. And we're looking at his budget, and they were doing a great job. They had gotten out of debt. They had their emergency fund in place. They were beating on the house, and they had the college fund going for their child. And everything was, you know, the baby steps were flowing there, but it was tight. It was really tight because there wasn't much money. They had one child. She gets pregnant with their second child. And he came in, and there was just sweat on this guy. He said, man, I had it going, but there's no way. I can't. There's not another $50 a month. There's not another $100 a month to do this child's college fund. I don't see these raises coming out of the school system anytime soon. I don't know what I'm going to do. Look at this budget, Dave. Help me, you know, let's squeeze it out. Let's find some money here because I'm going to do a college fund for this kid. I'm looking at him. I said, man, you know, maybe you need to just split this up and, you know, these kids each go to half a college or something, you know? I couldn't find it in the numbers. I looked at the math, and I wasn't much help to the guy. I sent him home with no hope. I said, I don't know what you're going to do. He came back a few weeks later. Actually, it was several months later, just after his second child was born. And his wife, standing next to him with tears running down her face, said, you know what this guy's been doing? And I said, no, what? And she said, every night, 7 days a week, he has delivered pizzas for the last 9 months. And he just put $12,000 cash into a mutual fund so that this baby will go to school. Now that's a dad. That's a dad. Home-based businesses are another method of generating supplemental income. Currently, 45% of Americans' homes have a business within the walls. We call those cottage industries these days. Cottage industries. Now, you know, as an example, a wonderful story is a lady who had this fabulous pecan recipe. Now, I'm from the South, and I like pecan pie. I like pie, period. I like a really good pecan pie. And she had everyone, all her friends had told her all her life it was her granny's pecan recipe. And everyone loved this lady's pecan pie. There was something special in the sauce, you know, whatever the deal. And so she decided she was going to try something. And she basically put an ad in some of the ladies' magazines that said, award-winning grandma's pecan pie recipe. Call for a hard copy of the recipe. You would call, and she simply said, leave your credit card number on the machine and your address and the mailing instructions, and I will mail it. And she sold it for just a couple of dollars or something like that. It was very small. This thing erupted, and her answering machine went berserk, and for many years, she made $14,000 a month. 1-900-PECAN. You know, 1-800-PECAN. What an idea. And so I think later they did change it to a 900, so you didn't even have to leave your card when the 900 numbers came out. So she just made her $4 or whatever off the 1-900 thing, and they left their address, and she would mail them out. She and the kids sit in the living room, fold up the pecan thing, send it out. But she hit a nerve. Something worked. Now, you could try 52 things like that didn't work, right? But she hit one that skyrocketed. So small business ideas, cottage industry ideas are fun. There's a whole list of them here on the next page. And I challenge you to look at some things to think about there. There's a lot of great ideas people do. The business that you're looking at, we started in our living room after going broke. We had the one desk that we had left after everything else left. And two folding tables with a couple of old, horrible computers and a dot matrix printer, you know. The first financial peace books that were self-published and put out. Any of you that have those little blue copies, I typeset those on the computer and printed them off on a laser printer for the original copies, took them down to the printer, and he turned that into the plates, and we printed up 1,000 financial peace books. It started out of my garage and out of my living room, and it grew and grew and grew because I didn't have the opportunity to go borrow $100,000 to throw this idea up against the wall. A, they wouldn't loan it to me, and B, I don't borrow money anymore. And so we started at home with a passion, with a calling, with a vocation, developed and honed the abilities as we went along, have gotten better. I'm a better leader today than I was then, that's for sure. And I'll be a better leader tomorrow than I was then. I'll be a better speaker, a better presenter 2 years from now than I am now because I will do more of it and I will watch videos and listen to the tapes and I'll just tell you those things are a brutal coach. Whew. So we're always getting a little bit better, always getting a little bit better, always moving along, and always moving further from the living room. But we never forgot that it started there in the living room, that I was typing at 2 a.m. in the morning and then typesetting at 3 a.m. and then get up the next day and go do my real estate stuff so we could eat and still have some financial peace because you got to sell a lot of $12 books to eat, people, you know? Think about it. And that's how it started. So don't be afraid to make your idea happen. Go try it. Sometimes you have to try it a little bit at a time at night or on the weekends, right? That's how we started. And you kind of get it going, and then, man, it becomes the idea that ate the house, and you have to move out and get an office, you know? And so try some small business ideas. Now, I want to give you a couple of things. Number one, I want to give you a warning. In conclusion, beware not to allow your work or career to be your only source of satisfaction and self-worth. Especially you guys. Guys, we tend to derive our self-esteem from what we leave the cave kill and drag home. And too many times you ask a guy who he is and he says what he does. You need to be somebody separate and apart from what you do. I am a father. I am a follower of Christ. I am a person who takes care of my body. I am a lot of things that is not financial peace and the Dave Ramsey show. Those are things that I do, and that I do with passion and with a belief all the way to the soles of my shoes. But they are not who I am. Don't derive your worth from that. You need to line up on some other things. Be careful with that. But then when you find that calling, while you're at work, try something. Work. You know? Go for it. I mean, some focused intensity. Get wired up. Push some things around. Nothing moves unless it's shoved. Make a decision. I'm not going to be this way. I'm not going to get up and hate my job every day the rest of my life. I can't do anything about it today, but over the next 3 years, I'm incrementally going to take the steps to make my dream come true. Bob Buford wrote a wonderful book called Halftime. Many of you need to go get that book at the Christian bookstore and read it, especially if you're over 30 years old, because you're at halftime, okay? And in his book, he asked the question that so many motivators have asked for years. If you had all the money that you needed and all the time that you needed, what would you do? It should be what you're doing right now. If not, you need to incrementally change it, because all you've got left is all the time. And all the money will come to a good idea and an energetic, passionate person that makes things happen. I can promise you money will flow to people like that. Ideas are a dime a dozen. People who make them happen aren't. How many dead patents are there of fabulous ideas that no one ever got off the ground because they couldn't get the marketing going and the idea was solid? Because they couldn't get it past the prototype? Because they didn't have enough passion, drive to not be denied, to push it over the top? Make a decision to live that way. Make a decision to live with some gazelle intensity in the area of your career. I can tell you this, you may take a pay cut to get into what you love, but long term, you will become so good at it that even if it's an industry that doesn't pay well, you'll be in the top 2% of income earners, because you will be the one that makes the money out of that industry. Okay? There's tons of industries that aren't known for producing big income, and there are big income producers within them because they are the best. They are the cream of the crop. They are the ones that make that happen. I love this. I was given this when I was just a child, and it has become just something that I absolutely tie into and will not be pulled away from. I do not choose to be a common man. It is my right to be uncommon if I can. I seek opportunity, not security. I do not wish to be a kept citizen, humbled and dulled by having the state look after me. I want to take the calculated risk to dream and to build, to fail and to succeed. I refuse to barter incentive for a dole. I prefer the challenges of life to the guaranteed existence, the thrill of fulfillment to the stale calm of utopia. I will not trade freedom for a beneficence, nor my dignity for a handout. I will never cower before any master, nor bend to any threat. It is my heritage to stand erect, proud, and unafraid, to think and act for myself, to enjoy the benefit of my creations, and to face the world boldly and say, "This I have done." Folks, America is the greatest country ever known in the history of man. All of this is what it means to be an American.
I think he really hits home with everybody.
And until, you know, finally, my wife and I woke up and said, look, you know, we're only getting into this hole further. And we need to change what we're doing.
That second career is always looming out there for anyone who's committed more than 10 years to the military and knows that they're going to have a second career. that the planning process, they need to start now.
He said the way that he's doing it is right. He said he's got God behind this, and with God behind you, you can do anything.
It took us almost a year. We both got part-time jobs. I delivered pizza. She worked at Walmart for a while. And we paid out of debt about $15,000 worth. And then we went to Disney World. Also, we saved up a six-month emergency fund during that time.
Credit cards reek.